The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday. It's the 3rd of March 2026. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well. It's great to have you on board, and we've got a packed 2 hours for you. Community Garda information coming up after 10, where we get the very latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána Conadad, and so much more besides. Get in touch with the programme. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25 000. And don't feel we have to raise the issue and for you to respond to it. If there's something that you want us to be talking about, maybe you've got an act of kindness or some good news that you wish to pass on as well, we love all of that. 07491 25 000 is the telephone number, or you can give us an email, comments@highlandradio.com. And if you're listening to the podcast, which is available for you on our website, highlandradio.com, or on Spotify, or on iTunes, you can still text in, you know. If you're listening to an episode from 3 weeks ago, we might wonder what you're on about. But if you're listening pretty much around the broadcast time, send us in your WhatsApps or your emails, and we'll carry them over into the next live show. Before I go to the papers, by the way, a few of you texting in relation to our listener's dilemma. She is part of a work group that have started looking after the nutrition and going to the gym. She received a personal message from a fellow gym goer saying, look at my gains from the waist up. She thinks it's inappropriate. Her friends think it's fine. It's just this is what we all signed up for. The females in the office are of the view that this is fine, context, unless there's an alternative context. The lads, not so much. What do you think? 086 60 25 000. Right. Of course, as you can imagine, there's blanket coverage in all of the papers of the situation in the Middle East. And there have been developments throughout. Thankfully, where a lot of our people are, and sorry to be so parochial on this, but where a lot of our people are, things are relatively calm. We're going to be hooking in with Dubai a little later on in the programme to get a sense of what it's like there at the moment. But Iran, even any country around it that has good relations with the US, is being targeted at the moment. And the US has pretty much, bar one or two countries in that area, has told its citizens to get out as soon as you can, which is kind of a strange suggestion given that there are no flights, very limited flights. Right, anyway, let's go with the Irish Times. Turmoil spreads across Gulf amid fears of protracted war. And this would be a big problem for Donald Trump, because the Americans are not interested. The American people are not interested in a protracted war. But fears of a protracted and complex war deepened as missile strikes were exchanged by countries across the Gulf yesterday, pushing the Middle East into a new chapter of volatility. The immediate consequences were evident in reports of hundreds of lives lost and thousands displaced within the region, and the more privileged fretting over spiking fuel and energy prices in Europe and the West. At the White House in Washington yesterday, US President Donald Trump said the United States would continue attacking Iran for as long as it takes to leave it incapable of posing a threat, indicating that an expanding war in the Middle East could continue for weeks or more, confirming that Operation Epic Fury was ongoing with combat strikes on Iran. Trump said there was an urgent need to eliminate the great threats posed to Americans by this terrible terrorist regime. We warned Iran not to make any attempt to rebuild at a different location, but they ignored those warnings and refused to cease their pursuit of nuclear weapons. This posed a very clear, colossal threat to America and our forces stationed overseas. So that's his. I just thought it interesting, and this is not, by the way, to say I'm pro-Iran, pro-US, none of that. It's just pure media observation, because I am a media consumer, and I was watching some of the BBC coverage of it yesterday, and I thought it was quite interesting. I'm not sure if it was to sort of try and counterbalance it or whatever, but they showed footage of tens of thousands of people, it would seem, on the streets of Iran, who seemed to be against what the US and Israel was doing. But they countered that with three phone calls from people in Iran saying, but not everybody's in favour of this. So it's kind of interesting an interesting editorial decision to see thousands of people waving Iranian flags seemingly in support of the current regime, but that being offset by three translated telephone calls with individuals. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was to try and show balance. It just seemed a bit bizarre. But obviously every action has a reaction, and we are thinking on those who are under threat of loss of life, of course. But we also have to consider our own lives, and we're struggling as it is to keep the power on, to keep the oil heating fired up, to keep petrol and diesel in our cars. But unfortunately, it seems that those things are going to cost us more. The Irish Independent tells us that consumers have been warned to brace for a surge in the price of petrol and diesel, electricity, gas and home heating oil. It's at this time that you would think the government should have a mechanism, and maybe this is crazy, but obviously this is a global situation, and there's an awful lot of expense on petrol and diesel that is, you know, to try and stop us using as much, carbon taxes and what have you. Wouldn't it be an idea, and as I say, this might be crazy, if we had a system whereby that was switched on and off dependent on the price of petrol and diesel or home heating oil, right? So obviously these are global matters outside the Irish government's control and outside our control. But what is within our control and the government's control is how much of these carbon taxes are applied to fuel. So wouldn't it make sense, or would it, I'm asking, that say, for instance, the raw cost of petrol and diesel reached, if it reached a certain amount, that these fees could be suspended and then, you know, reintroduced as the price goes back down again. And that would help us. It kind of still would, I think, meet the commitment the government has in terms of trying to reduce our dependency on these fuels. But in a cost of living crisis, if they could be suspended at times. So say, for instance, the carbon taxes could be at least partly suspended for the next 2 months. So hopefully things will not last that long. Wouldn't that be good for us, the citizens? And then they could just kick back in. But if we knew what the criteria was where when these taxes were switched on or off, you know, we would have some certainty. And then the government might not have to dig into resources to try and do certain cost of living payments or something. It probably couldn't happen, but that's the kind of nuanced governance that would be fantastic. So that we're not facing a threat of €2 a litre, that we have some sort of a system where the carbon taxes can be suspended until such time as things calm down globally. But anyway, reading on, that's never going to happen, and I'm probably talking nonsense. But reading on here, the US and Israel's attacks on Iran could see a litre of motor fuel jump by 70 cents and electricity costs by more than 60%. Price rises of up to 20% in home heating oil have been predicted. They're already being applied, it would seem. Energy expert Professor Aoife M. Foley said consumers in this country could be faced with massive increases. Professor Foley, who is from Cork, is the chair in the net zero infrastructure at the University of Manchester, and she's calculated that the price of petrol in Ireland could rise by 70 cent a litre to €2.44 in the case of a severe shock to the oil industry in the Middle East. Can you imagine? And a 1,000 litre fill of heating oil could possibly increase from around €1,000 to an estimated €1,950, the professor calculated. Wowzers. The only saving grace in terms of home heating oil is potentially the fact that we might be heading to a period where we need it less. But if those prices go up to those levels and become the norm, like I think if petrol or diesel goes above €2 a litre, I don't think it'll ever come below it again. That would be my concern. The Bord Beer protest is over. As you know, we've been to the offices of the Bord Beer, of Bord Beer on a number of occasions just to track what's been going on down there. But now we can report that farmers have left the offices of Bord Beer after a deal was struck to conduct an external governance review of the organisation. The month-long protest came about after it emerged a private company run by Bord Beer chair Larry Moran imported 1% of its beef from Brazil. The Irish Farmers Association said Mr. Moran was conflicted in his role as chair of Bord Beer, which is tasked with promoting Irish beef abroad and runs a certification process for farmers in this country. However, the government, Bord Beer, and Mr. Moran himself refused to back down on the matter, with government sources stressing he had done nothing illegal. Senior figures in the coalition saw the calls for Mr. Moran's resignation of a state board as a threat to the government's executive power. I don't really think, I've never heard an accusation that he was doing anything illegal. That never came across in front of me. It was just really the optics of it, is the impression I got. What do you think of Jim O'Callaghan's comments on Chrysler? We spoke yesterday, obviously, to Shauna and Donna, who both lost loved ones in the Chrysler tragedy, and they're pressing for a meeting with Jim O'Callaghan. They just want a meeting with him, I suppose, to get an update on where things are at. But he's doubling down on his view that the criminal investigation needs to run its course before anything else is looked at. But one sort of quote that jumped out at a lot of people in relation to this was his statement that he is not... it's not his job to be sensitive. What do you think? Is it his job to be sensitive? This is what he had to say. One sec. Here we go.
You know, that being insensitive to them by not meeting them, they described it on Friday as a slap in the face.
No, listen, my job is not to be sensitive. My job is to ensure that justice is delivered. I'm the Minister for Justice. I want to ensure that the families of Chrysler get justice. The only way justice can be provided to them is through the courts. And we're at a very advanced stage of the criminal investigation. As I say, a file has been provided to the DPP. My understanding is that a further file will be provided. And then if criminal prosecutions are initiated, I think that process is the only way through which justice can be provided.
And I think an interesting context to that was the question. So we'll listen to the question one more time. This is in terms of meeting the Chrysler families.
You know, that being insensitive to them by not meeting them, they described it on Friday as a slap in the face.
No, listen, my job is not to be sensitive.
So I don't want to take it out of context. As you've heard, he went on to say, so is it his job to be sensitive? The question directly was, do you not think you're being insensitive not meeting the families? Maybe he's just being practical. Maybe this is the way it needs to be, even if people want it to be a different way. But the Minister for Justice, reading on here, has said it's not his job to be sensitive, but to ensure justice was delivered when asked if his refusal to meet families affected by the Chrysler tragedy was insensitive. But what say you? 086 60 25,000. And two-thirds of Irish homeowners, wait till you hear this, two-thirds of Irish homeowners dislike their neighbours. Ah, okay, I can't say anything about my neighbours or else... I'll get chucked out. My neighbours are great. It also revealed just one in three people trust the people next door, and fewer than one quarter feel they have a strong sense of community. Now, I get the last bit, but two-thirds of Irish homeowners dislike their neighbours. Do you think that's true? Doesn't sound right. I wonder, is that urban-rural mix? Two-thirds of you, so 66% of you don't like your neighbours. What do you think? Louise Loughlin, Deputy Director of the Residential Tenancies Board. Thanks for joining us, Louise. Great to have you on the show.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Right, so new rental rules are now officially in effect for new tenancies, signed from Sunday. So what are the big changes for renters?
Hiya. So the main thing we want to get across to everyone listening to your show this morning is that existing landlords and tenants don't need to do anything except to make sure they're informed of the changes, and they can read lots of information on our website at rtb.ie. So the tenancies that are in Donegal at the moment, people will just carry on as normal as they are. There are changes though in relation to rent review. So once a year, a landlord can review the rent, so the rules around that have changed. And then if someone enters into a new tenancy from Sunday, so from the 1st of March, the rules around that have changed.
Right, so if someone is renting at the moment at a rate that is, what you could argue, below market norms, they're locked into that now for how long?
So for as long as that tenancy exists, the maximum that that landlord can increase the rent is either 2% or the rate of inflation, whichever is the lower. So he cannot, the landlord in that situation cannot reset to market rent. So that's not going to happen for people. And if it does happen to anyone, then they can come to the RTB for a dispute case.
And what then would the criteria be for ending a lease or a rental agreement, sorry? Now, what rules are in place for landlords, for an example?
Yeah, so the big change that's happened now is there's a difference between landlords, what we're calling small landlords and large landlords. So small landlords have between one and three tenancies, and they can end a tenancy at any time if the tenant breaches their obligations. So that's normally where the tenant doesn't pay the rent, or antisocial behaviour, or the property is no longer suitable for their needs. Now the big change also that's coming in for new tenancies entered into after Sunday, so after the 1st of March, is a minimum duration of 6 years. So tenants now have security of tenure, which they didn't previously have. The landlord can only end that if they need to sell to avoid undue financial or other hardship, or if the landlord or a close family member needs to live in the property. So that's for landlords that have one to three tenancies.
How is hardship defined in that context? You sort of gave the impression there that the landlord was in hardship where they had to sell the property. Is that the criteria, or how does the landlord prove their hardship?
Yeah, where they have to sell. Yeah, yeah. So I don't have all of that detail in front of me right now, Greg, but we do have it on our website, the precise definition. But basically, it's only where the landlord needs to sell. So it's not like, you know, they have a small debt that they need to pay, so they want to, you know, draw down more borrowing on the property to pay that off. They actually have to sell the property. So it's kind of at the more pronounced end of it, I would say. Like, they have to actually, and they have to prove that to the RTB. If not, then the tenant can bring a case to us for dispute resolution.
We're 6 years away from this potentially being an issue, but if someone is in situ with a small landlord at the end of 6 years, what can happen then to the rent?
So in that situation where it's a small landlord, at the end of the 6 year cycle, the landlord can actually end the tenancy for additional reasons. So if the landlord themselves or a family member needs to live in the property, if they want to sell at the end of the 6 years, if they want to substantially refurbish or renovate, or if they want to change the property. Now, that's not particularly different from what we have at the moment for all tenancies, because all landlords can end a tenancy at the moment if they wish to sell. So that won't really change hugely. If they want to change the rent, then they can only do that where there's a change in the tenant. So your listeners will have heard a lot of talk about market rent, and the landlord, where it's a small landlord in that situation, can only reset to market rent at the end of the 6 year cycle where the last tenancy ended, because the tenant left by choice breached their obligation of the property no longer meets their needs.
So if you were, in other words, if you're in situ after 6 years, everything's going fine, the landlord can't then say, right, well, the 6 years has passed, you're staying, but the rent's going up to such and such outside the scope of the 2% or inflation per year.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, you have it there. Yeah, that's correct.
Right. So is there any difference then for larger landlords with, is it three or more or four or more tenants?
Four or more. So that's the big difference. Mm. So for landlords who have four or more tenancies, it's much more restrictive for them. The only basis on which they can end the tenancy in the 6 year cycle is if the tenant breaches their obligations or the property is no longer suitable for the tenant's needs. That's the only reason which a larger landlord can end the tenancy. So if the larger landlord during the 6 year cycle makes a decision that they want to sell their properties, they can't do that. You know, they can only sell they can only do it if the tenant breaches their obligations, and that's the only basis for the eviction.
And landlords now, if the tenancy were to end today, they can fix the rent at the market rate, can't they? For a new tenant.
No, they can't. And there's been a lot of talk about this, and it's not correct. So for existing tenancies, where the tenancy comes to an end, so if I was in a tenancy agreement with you and I left tomorrow, you couldn't reset to market rent. You could only reset it to either 2% or the rate of inflation, whichever is the lower. And that's the case for most situations. So it's only at the end of the 6 year cycle that will apply. So it's really important that people understand that, both landlords and tenants.
And how is that tracked, Louise? Is it because they are registered with the RTB, or, you know, if someone's renting a house in Letterkenny, for example, for €800, and then they decide the tenant leaves and they list it today then for €1,400 as an example. How is that tracked or flagged, you know, to say, well, you can't push it up €600 even for a new tenant? How do you keep track of that?
Yeah, so the most important thing is for all landlords to make sure that they register the tenancies with the RTB. It is actually a criminal offence not to register your tenancy with us. So we would say to any landlords that are listening this morning, make sure when you enter into a new tenancy, make sure it's registered with us. You can do that online and you can check with us any questions you have about it. We do monitor the activity in the market. So every quarter we come out and we talk about the levels of rent, and we review those and we keep track of them. Particular situations and a particular individual circumstance, the tenant always has the right to come to us either for a dispute, or if the landlord isn't registered with us, they can always flag that as well and we can look into that for them. So we would say that if anyone, either landlord or tenant, or if a party, a neighbour or anyone like that who has any information, always to contact us.
So if I were renting a property and I didn't like the tenants and I said, look, I'm afraid you're going to have to leave because my son's moving back from Europe and needs the property. At what point, like, and I don't do that? How, I mean, is there a period of time before you can, so I could get them outright and say, actually, my son's changed his mind, he's staying in wherever he is. I'm actually going to rent this property again. What's to stop that happening? And how might that be tracked?
So if you were the tenant in that situation and if that particular circumstance came happened upon you, I would say in the first instance you should contact us and ask for information, because every case is slightly different. Every case has nuances and we need to look at that with you. But you would always have the right to bring a dispute case. And in that particular situation, if the landlord said, I want you to move out because my son is moving in, and then the son doesn't move in, the tenant then can bring a dispute case and they potentially could be successful in that. You could be awarded damages and also you could have the right to get the tenancy back at that point as well.
Mm-hmm. Is it maybe not within your scope to be concerned about the potential for landlords exiting the market and for us to have less rental properties available because they've less control over their own property? Or maybe that's for the government to worry about?
I think that's a question for the government there. But I suppose I would say that these new rules are bringing certainty for both landlords and tenants, you know, so there's much more clarity. Before, we had the RPZs that were continued every year. So from a landlord's perspective, you know, they could have been continued. The government could have made the decision to discontinue them. Now we have certainty because it's written into law. So, you know, a landlord in their own situation can read up on our website all the information they need about their own individual circumstances. And we do think over time that will bring more certainty for people.
Just as a renter, how do you know whether your landlord would be classed as the smaller landlord or the big landlord? Because obviously that would have an impact on your rights.
Yeah, so you can check that with us. You can get in contact with us on our website. You can read up about your particular circumstances, how they apply to you. We're also running a series of webinars at the moment for everyone. Like, they're open to the public. Anyone could go on and register. They're running all week where people can get more information. If you want to check about your particular circumstances, you can get in contact with us as well on our web chat function. You can ask your particular question about your own situation. If we don't have the answer for it right away for you, because, you know, it is quite complex, then we will have a look at that and we will get in contact with you. So I just encourage people to make sure that they look at all the information that is available and read up on that for their own situation.
Louise, thanks for your time. That's Louise Loughlin, Deputy Director of the Residential Tenancies Board. Any views in relation to that, please let us know. 086 6025 000. WhatsApps and texts, and you've been using that number quite a lot already this morning. The minister is being outrageous, says this listener, not meeting the Chrysler families. His job is to answer questions and keep the lines of communications open. History repeating itself over and over again. The families will campaign until there is change. It's a campaign for prevention and awareness. People see and have saw what truths have been hidden in the past. On oil prices, it'd be cheaper to shoot Trump than be paying them. won't be fit to pay them prices for oil and gas. Relying on intermittent wind turbines that require gas backup 24/7 is within the government's control, but there's no coherent energy plan. We will have electricity blackouts because of an electricity grid dependent on imported gas and imported electricity from the UK, including nuclear power, which is banned here. Talk about hypocrisy. 500 litres of home heating oil, €470 last week, €610 today, and you are limited to 500 litres. It's all about supply and demand. People need to stop creating a demand that is not necessary. I mean, this is very early for restrictions on quantity and what appears to be close on a 50% increase in home heating oil, doesn't it? You know, I didn't realise that we were so tuned into geopolitical situations. How in God's name do they know all of that information at this point? Anyway, let me see. Oil prices. This is the price difference for 500 litres of oil less than 5 minutes apart today. So it went from 545 to 585. Thank you for sending that in, by the way, and it's images so we can see firsthand. Is it not a disgrace that the local heating oil company has hit us already? They did not buy oil at the higher price yet. I don't know what the ins and outs of that is. Let's see if we can track some information down in relation to that. Now we're joined on the programme by David Hall, owner of Lifeline Ambulance Services. David, thank you for your time today and a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, a dispute at the National Ambulance Service has worsened following a row over permanent contracts for newly qualified paramedics. The HSC denied SIPDU claims the service was backed out of a commitment to give 75 paramedics full-time jobs, saying their training contracts have been extended to allow for a recruitment process. A petition has been created to support the ambulance crews. What's your views on this, David?
I think, to be very clear, the custom and practice for the last number of decades have been, and many of my own staff in Lifeline Ambulance Service are people who've moved across to the National Ambulance Service to do the paramedic course, to train as paramedics, and are currently working as paramedics within the HSC. And a number of my staff are affected by this group, former staff who are now members of this National Ambulance Service group of 76 people. I think it's shameful. I think they've been misled. I think they've been shafted. I think it's a disgrace. It's very, very simple, Greg. There's no what-ifs and maybes about this. There's no brain surgery involved in this. You were hiring in people to train them. You train them at the taxpayer's expense. You put them through a three-year degree program through University College Cork to train as paramedics. You had them working on the ambulances. You gave them contracts in December saying they would be employed. And there's one tiny little clause within that that you're now relying on because you want to change how you deploy staff. And there's a rule that people to be allocated within a 50-kilometre radius of where they are. They want to remove that. That's the real effort that's been made here. But it's very disingenuous to do that with a cohort of people who are live. So even if you wanted to go and make a change and change the terms and conditions of how you employ people, you don't do this in a manner that you've done this like this. It's wholly unprofessional, it's wholly undignified, it's disrespectful, and I think it will actually have a very serious implication on future hiring of staff. I wouldn't go to National Ambulance Service in circumstances where my future employment is uncertain, having given up my job somewhere else.
Yeah, sorry, read between the lines here, David. I mean, this arguably could boost your retention, presumably. So in a way, you're having to sort of look at this without your own best interests at heart.
The staff that are there are staff who've gone and trained and want to be paramedics. I don't have a need for paramedic staff. Mm. Predominant majority of my staff are emergency medical technicians. The service we provide is an intermediate service. The service I provide is not a service the HSC provides, by the way. They don't do the calls I do. That's why I do those calls. They've made a policy decision not to do those calls. So the staff I need for those calls are the emergency medical technician staff, not the paramedic staff. So if all 76 applied for me to a job in the morning, I'd probably have room for 10.
Get you, yeah.
So just to be clear, it's nothing to do with an employment issue. They're better served where they are. We have horrific response times. We don't have enough ambulances. We treat emergency staff horrifically. We underpay them. We devalue them. Everyone did happy clappy stuff after COVID when all emergency services and all ambulance services from all services, my own included, the National Ambulance Service, voluntary ambulance services, all private ambulance services, not just my own, all stepped up. And ever since then, everyone's forgotten that and has for decades neglected the ambulance service in total. This is just one symptom of that. This is just one indication of how they've done it. And, you know, these are staff who've dedicated themselves, made big career decisions to move across on a clear expectation. There's an absolute clear expectation they would have a full-time contract of employment after this course. They most certainly would not have moved without it.
And I think maybe, well, I'd hope the HSC have underestimated the public support for paramedics, because you couldn't overstate their important role in our health service and the amazing work that they do. And I'm not just throwing that out there. We get those types of communications on a regular basis, David. And if people feel like that, the best thing they can do is sign this petition.
Sign the petition, contact your local TD. You know, a lot of TDs are very busy. They've got a lot of different things on their agenda. Everyone appreciates that. A lot of friends and a lot of former staff members of mine work for the National Ambulance Service. I speak with them and work with them on a regular basis. I think the management structure is horrific. And again, as I say, they don't do the work I do, Greg. So just from a pure competitive perspective, the work I do, if the National Ambulance Service in the morning stop doing its work, I can't do the work. So just be clear. And vice versa, if I stop doing my work, they can't do the work. There are different types of calls being done by private operators throughout the entire country. And it's not a competitive issue. Got no interest in relation to that at all. The issue at hand here is a national disrespect of frontline staff. The whole area isn't regulated properly. Staff are disrespected in relation to how they're the employment terms and conditions. These are people who on a daily basis, and I know we had a bus crash recently in Dublin where it was a hugely horrific incident, but every day ambulance staff all over the country from all different services come across and witness the most difficult set of circumstances. Two people in a vehicle, 5.5 ton, highly trained people, dedicated, underpaid, undervalued, and in a toxic environment. There's no other ambulance service in the world, to my mind, that over the last 18 months has voted no to a pay rise. Voted no to a pay rise. Find me any profession in the world that on two separate occasions in 18 months, that's the environment they're working in. An unhealthy, unhelpful environment. And the Minister for Health should immediately appoint somebody independently to go into the National Ambulance Service and look at all aspects related to it. It has no impact on me. I can't do their work. They can't do my work. I'm at capacity. It has no value to me in any sense of the world. I want a functioning, proper National Ambulance Service for everybody. Because like you, Greg, and I, we dial 999 and 112. We need to make sure that those people who turn up in a timely manner. And having 76 people not employed will horrifically impact on crap response times. Absolutely embarrassing response times.
Life-ending response times at times too. David, thank you very much indeed. And we wanted to tap into your knowledge and experience in that area. And we do appreciate it. David Hall, owner of Lifeline Ambulance Services.
Where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Back to the price of oil. Yesterday, I contacted my central heating supplier asking the price of 600 litres of kerosene. I was told that no prices would be given to 2 days or for 2 days to see how prices go. Surely this is illegal. If they have the product in their tanks, why are they allowed to wait until the prices go up? I'm not happy with this practice. And this is confusing me because it's different. Say, for instance, it's different if it's to do with VAT rates or the government levies, whatever they're called again, because they do come into effect immediately on the sale. But this is about, you know, what you have in your tanks at the moment, not necessarily what you're buying in. Another, the fear is these prices go up now, which have a knock-on effect on food prices. My biggest fear is the oil and petrol prices will come down again, but the food prices seem to remain high. On the issue of renting, how would you know how many properties your landlord has? Well, you can check if they're registered with the RTB. A caller says, is it 6 years from now or 6 years from when you started? I believe it's 6 years from now. I'll double check that. What if they aren't registered with the RTB? I don't think mine is because I can't find them on the website. We'll double check those three questions that are intertwined. Hi, I've got a property. I won't be renting it. Too much government taxes, 45%, and problems then with tenants. in relation to what's happening in the Middle East. Trump and Netanyahu are thugs and bullies. They've slaughtered in Iraq, Palestine and Afghanistan and now Iran. They're bullying Venezuela, and next on the list is Cuba. The problem is where murderous bullies go after that. They're running out of a weak, out of weak countries to attack. Meanwhile, Putin carries on his war in Ukraine while Trump runs scared away from him. Actions of a typical bullying coward. A war with Putin is going to win. A war which Putin is going to win. Israel's out of control, invading Beirut, Lebanon, but will be playing footy with them in October. Michael Martin, McEntee say it's concerning. What brilliant leaders we've got. They're only worried about their trip on St. Patrick's Day, even if the world is at war, which we're not quite at that yet. You know, I mean, like China is doing its thing. Russia obviously is doing its thing. The United States is doing its thing. They don't seem to be interfering with each other. It's terrible because I'm talking about these people, these countries bombing. They might call legitimate targets, but an awful lot of civilians in the way in the meantime. I'm not sure they're going to interact on this, to be honest with you. And I have a feeling that the Chinese, they want a bit of stability now. Russia wants back into the world order, I think. I'm not saying everything's rosy in the garden, but I have a feeling this will last for a couple of weeks and things will calm back down again. But we shall see. Dara Nolan lives near the airport in Dubai, which was bombed, originally from Rafah. He joins us on the programme now. Thank you very much for your time, Dara.
Hey, Greg. How are you getting on?
I'm OK. Right. So talk us through Saturday and how big of a shock all of that came and how that day unfolded for you.
Yeah, so myself and my fiancée Laura were just out doing a bit of kind of, we just moved into our new apartment and we were out doing a bit of shopping not too far away from one of the kind of close to the American bases from where we're based. And we were leaving and all of a sudden we started to hear a number of kind of loud bangs. Now, this was kind of after work, after I kind of had seen that the Israel and the and USA had attacked the Iranian city of Tehran, and we kind of came out and all of a sudden saw some missiles, intercepting missiles being shot up in the sky, hitting three what looked like, I think they're ballistic missiles that came from Iran initially. So it was very close for comfort for us. We were obviously a bit shook. And ever since then, we feel very safe, in fairness, like, but it's the noise is very unsettling. We could see smoke plumes from the airport when we were kind of on our way back from being out. I know colleagues of mine that were working close to the port could see that the port was attacked as well. Yesterday there was a data center attacked as well, which is concerning. You know that they're trying to attack the infrastructure now, because pretty much I was in work on Monday yesterday, and literally within 10 minutes of us being on site, ballistic missiles were taken down. I think there was 20 fired. Now the good thing is that the UAE has probably one of the best air defense systems in the world. So we do feel very safe. The noises that you hear are them intercepting drones. I think there's been about 500 drones have been taken down, of probably 100 have probably got through, but hasn't caused that much damage. Obviously, look, there's unfortunate people have died, but that was from the debris, not directly from the drone strikes. It's a very... We feel safe, but it's a very concerning time, and this it could easily erupt into something more. Because after the words of President Trump stating that this could be a 4-week issue, that is very concerning for a number of people that I've talked to here.
Of course, we don't know we know the resilience of the air defences, but in terms of what weaponry Iran has that it has yet to use, or indeed for how long, if there is a continuous barrage, for how long, you have to fire a rocket to defend against a rocket, right? So you have to hope they have an awful lot of them. Has things calmed down since, though, the last couple of days? Because we're day four now, I believe. Obviously, Saturday was very intense. Is there much activity now?
There is, yeah. So literally, I was on the phone to one of your producers there, and a fighter jet just flew overhead. Like, there's lulls in between periods of kind of missiles being fired across, because that's like on the geopolitical side. Like, literally, the next stop over the Gulf Sea is Iran. So we're very close to it, and there's a number of obviously U.S. bases here, but it is like it's. You can still hear the odd bang every hour or so, but it's that fear of how much defense rockets or interceptor rockets that they still have, and if Iran chooses to fire numerous, some of those are going to get through. So that's kind of where the hot spot is, like, of the dynamics of how this could turn into something a bit more dangerous, you know.
I have been trying to track information from both sides. I know the authorities over there are very keen for people only to follow their information. And if you do so, they're trying to portray, and maybe it is a reality, that it's business as usual. You couldn't be anywhere safer than Dubai right now. I'm talking to you from Dubai, but they're saying the same of other countries. In terms of the Irish embassy and the response, like, all I've saw today is that they're not going to be in the office because it's too dangerous. There doesn't seem to be a ton of useful information. Stay where you are. Don't try and go to Omar, and keep listening to what the Middle Eastern authorities are saying. That's it. Register. I'm not seeing anything else. I'm not being critical. I'm just observing.
No, Greg, I completely agree. And this has been a concern of a number of people I've talked to out here. The embassy has been very, very quiet on the, I suppose, issuing an update or even getting an update from the ambassador. I've just asked, after seeing just a few hours ago, I just see that the ambassador has finally released the video. All they seem to be doing is resharing the Department of Foreign Affairs their kind of statements or updates. We feel very safe here, like, because of the UAE government's stance. Like, obviously, look, they're well equipped and well prepared to deal with something like this, but you would feel that our Irish government should be your presence here. The link didn't work, and I say about 40 people commented on the social media platform that their link wasn't working and that they weren't being able to register. That obviously then started to put fear in people that what do we do? Where are we? And no one's talking to us. I finally got registered. Only last night I got an email after I sent an email to Helen McEntee's, the minister's office, stating that there's a lack of communication from the Irish government out here, and that they really need to start to take this more seriously, because there are a number of people that are obviously in transit here, travelling, that are stuck here. I was chatting to someone who's kind of had to cancel her flights because the travel agents has recommended that they do that, you know. So there
and
are
just
flights
to, being just, ta- to, just to, I think you're actually going to say this, but there are flights taking off, five or six yesterday, more today from Dubai Airport. So the government could be working on repatriation flights, because if the airport is allowing some planes to take off, which is not without peril, but they are, why aren't we talking about commissioning a couple of planes, the Emirates Airlines or whomever it might be, and offering people lifts home? I don't think people like you. I mean, people who are stuck there from like, there is stuff, it seems, we could be doing that we're not doing. We're just saying shelter in place, follow local guidelines. That's it. But that doesn't,
That's correct. Yeah. Like, I mean, the thing is, like, we went out last night just to kind of to walk around to see. And there's a lot, obviously, the fighter jets are going overhead. But that, I think they're patrolling the airspace where the planes are able to land. So I think from my understanding from the discussions that are being held on the news here, tomorrow I think they're going to start to really open up the airspace a bit more. But that could change all of a sudden. But you're right,
I think the Iranians are watching the news too.
100%. I spoke to my fiance Laura about, like, would she want to go back? Like, we're happy to stay here. We want to stay here. We feel safe. But, like, you would fear that if you do get on a flight now, that the risk is greater than where you are sitting at the moment, you know.
I would concur. I really would, because whilst they're changing the, I think they're going out over Omar, while you're on the tarmac in Dubai and ascending, it's not without peril, I would say. But anyway, Dara, thanks very much for your time. You're going to wait and see what this means, I suppose, to your future. None of us know what really the next week, 2 weeks or months even potentially holds.
Yeah, we're just going to take it day by day. You know, this could turn all of a sudden into something bigger, or it could just because I believe that the Iranian missiles even towards Israel or to Lebanon have reduced. So maybe their defense or their rocket numbers are dwindling, or maybe they're planning for something bigger. So it's the uncertainty is a concern. But look, we'll keep you informed anyway of any updates.
Yeah, look after yourself. Stay safe. Passing our best wishes to your fiance. That's Dara Nolan, living near the airport that was bombed in Dubai. Originally from Rafo. A caller says, morning, Greg. You ask why our government hasn't commissioned a couple of planes to get people home. The answer to that question is this government and many before it are reactive. They never do anything proactively. If an Irish person is hurt or killed, then they'll do something. It's shocking. On the IFA, a caller believes the IFA have been duped. Government have won as the chairman has not resigned. Let me see. On the price of oil and fuel, Greg mentioned today about the rise in diesel. It's at 198.9 for diesel in Dunloe today. The prices have jumped. You can really see it. 198.9. To put up the price of oil is a total con. I'm a pensioner and I'm ordering oil. I ordered the oil yesterday. It went up by 200 euro. Why are the Irish companies conning everyone? We have litres and litres of oil. This is pure greed. And lots of you texting in on Chrysler as well. I will get to those comments. But I want to go to Inishowen and I want to go to Buncrana, where clarity is being sought about a review of parking charges in Buncrana. Local councillor Jack Murray is with me to discuss this. Jack, thanks for your time.
No problem. Good morning, Greg.
Right, so what is the current situation in terms of parking charges, if any?
I want to reassure businesses in the town that, from my perspective, there is no jeopardy to the half-hour free parking in the town. Look, and I was surprised as anybody to see an article online last night saying that the free half-hour was at risk. From my perspective, it is not at risk. It's something I feel very strongly about. The businesses in the town feel very strongly about. And the three councillors in Inishowen, the three councillors in Buncrana met with the staff in the parking section on the 14th of November last year. It was a very, very productive meeting, amicable meeting, and all three councillors stated categorically that we support the maintenance of the free half hour, and that was agreed. Mm. And that is still the position.
As far as you're aware, I think I didn't see the article, that there was some sort of a public consultation. You are elected reps. There isn't an executive there. Is the executive reviewing the situation as far as you're aware?
Yeah, there's a county-wide review, because there's obviously differences between all the towns where parking charges are applied. So there's a county review ongoing. There'll be a public consultation at some point this year. There's no date set for that. That's going through legal advice. The executive always been very clear. They want to see the abolition of the free half-hour parking charges, but it's a reserve function of the elected reps, and the elected reps have made it very, very clear. It was a massive issue before the last local election, and the businesses in Buncrana rallied very strongly together in defence of the half hour, saying it's vital for the protection of businesses in the town. And look, as elected reps, we listened and I agree wholeheartedly with their position on that, and we made that clear again. So I don't expect there to be any proposition to abolish the half hour free charge, and if there is, I would expect it to be voted down.
And ultimately, you're saying this is a function of the elected reps, that even if the council, and as you say, they would be keen to get rid of this, even if the council proposed that or suggested, ultimately the decision is made by councillors, and from any correspondence I've seen, councillors are united in saying, no, the businesses want to keep this and we'll keep this.
Yeah, it's a reserve function of the council. The executive have proposed numerous times over my time in the council to abolish the half hour. There was a move, as I said, in the last term of the council to abolish that. But when it came to the elected reps, it was voted down fairly heavily and expected to be done again. Now, I do expect in the review, and I'd have to be brutally honest with people, that there probably will be a marginal increase in the charge over the half hour, because it hasn't increased in almost 20 years. At the minute, the charge, once you stay more than that in car parks, is 30 cent an hour. It's 50 cent an hour on the streets. It's very, very low compared to other towns. So I would expect, and there was support at the meeting for that, for an increase on that. And that will now bring in money. It's the only money that is ring-fenced specifically for the town where it's raised. So street sweeping is a massive issue in Buncrana. I want to raise money to cover the street sweeping, support the likes of the Christmas Lights Committee, St. Patrick's Day Committee.
So what's the current parking charges once, obviously, the half an hour has elapsed? 30 cent an hour?
30 cent an hour or in a car park, 30 cent an hour, 50 cent in the street, or but if you want to stay all day in the car park, 24 hours a day is €1.
And what would you be agreeable to in terms of increases there? Give me the figures.
Well, I think for all day in a car park, we're talking about €3 for the full day in a car park. For the main street, €1.50 an hour for the max of two hours. So it'll be €3, the max that you would spend there. And I think it's €1 for car
parks. Big increases. I know they haven't gone up for a while, but they are big increases in a time when people are squeezed and you're asking them to go in and spend money in local businesses.
Absolutely. But look, if you go to any town anywhere in Ireland, if you were asked €3 for a full day in the car park,
I don't want people to go to every town in Ireland. You want them to go to Buncrana.
I would like, and I've discussed this extensively with businesses, with members of the Tidy Towns, with members of the community. And the agreed kind of point of view is that the half hour is protected, because that's what allows people to pop into your newsagents for your ice cream, for your birthday cards, and move on, keep the street moving. It's a matter of convenience.
At the moment, is there a 2 hour limit at the moment?
There isn't. That's to be maintained, and then that's vitally important. And like, that was the
you don't want it to be staff parking either at the end of the day. It has to be available. Stay where you are. We'll get a business perspective now from Paul Brogan, coordinator of Buncrana Businesses Together. Paul, are you reassured that whilst this might be going out as part of a public consultation, that has to be countywide? You can't exclude a region just because people in that area don't agree with it. But ultimately, it'll come down to the council, and Jack is confident the council would vote down any suggestion of an increase. So scrapping this half hour. Are you encouraged by that?
Yeah, good morning, Greg, and good morning, Jack. I'm encouraged, yeah, surely, because we do have the backing of the three local councillors. And as Jack says there, this is going to be decided really by the local councillors. What I think is going on here, and it's happened before years ago, I think there's a bit of kite flying here, in that there will be multiple changes proposed. Some will be enforced and some will be sort of given back as a little appease to you. So as regards the increase in the parking, we suggested that 2 years ago, to put it up from 50 cent to €1, because we felt 50 cent was too light, considering it was there a long time. We also asked for a certain area of the town to be put into paid parking, because there were a lot of vehicles there, and that money could have made up for a lot of the street cleaning that was needed. Now, again, we would support that. I think there's another avenue there that may be coming out. I'm not fully up to it, but I've just read your article, or the article this morning, and it's to do with certain areas of residential that may be asked to pay. And if they don't pay, or if they won't pay, they have to apply for a permit, and that would be a paid permit. Now, as regards the half hour, I'm fully convinced that ain't going anywhere. We've done it 2 years ago. With the support of over 100 businesses and six councillors at the time. So I would have no worry that they'd want to go back down that route again, because I've already done it once, I can do it again.
Just in fairness to
the other thing that I'm a little bit thinking, I think there's kite flying here.
Yeah. But that can they
agree to three things and expect us to agree then to the residents, and we're not getting involved.
But we'll tease out the residents a little bit more. I think, to be honest with you, in fairness to the council, it would be prudent of them to reassess these situations on a reasonably regular basis. It doesn't mean that they are necessarily looking to push something through, but to reevaluate. I don't think that's a bad thing if you get the right result, if you know what I mean. Jack, what have you to say on residential permits, these proposals?
It's mentioned, I think there's a proposal for residential permits of €20 a year. Personally, I don't think it's necessary. Look, I'm one of the people in the town who avails of a residence permit. It's free at the minute and just ensures that I'm allowed to park on a street in front of my house because I have nowhere else to park. But I don't.
You shouldn't have a car, Jack. You should be walking everywhere.
Well, unfortunately, I live in Donegal, so I can't walk just everywhere I need to go. But I don't think that is necessary at all. I think Paul,
so Paul's the permits, right, there is already permits. The change would be a charge for them. To be charged to park outside your own house doesn't rest easy with me now.
And even at it would raise such a little amount of money that it wouldn't have an impact really on what you're trying to achieve by raising stuff for the town. So I don't think it's necessary. It's not something I would support.
Paul, again, the council will explore it. Are you pleased to hear from Councillor Murray there? He also wouldn't be in favour of that.
Well, I am pleased that Jack has said that. I just hope that it's remembered when the consultation process ticks on, and also at the end of it, as regards, you know, we get the half hour, put up the prices surely because the prices are too cheap, and make sure that any other parking areas that is for business parking is paid for. Also, signs for parking. I've asked this a number of years ago. There's a car park behind the old plaza. There's still no sign to say there's a car park behind the old plaza. And if you have strangers coming through Buncrana Main Street, they just drive on because they don't know where the car park is. There is a car park, St Mary's Road, and there is a sign there for that one, for the ones coming from the south, but from the ones coming from the north, and it's shown they can just drive on through.
Right,
but again, we're getting there. We are getting there.
Okay.
We started a group, as you know, in September, Buncrana Businesses Together. We have over 100 members in it. We launched vouchers. Scheme, we sold over 80,000 in 2 months, and now we're looking at the digital card system. And what I intend to do is get the Buncrana business people to work together to support the local councillors and to build Buncrana up again, because there's been not a lot done the last 5-7 years before COVID and after COVID. But we're the business people, and we'll stand up and be counted. But the councillors need to be backing the business people who are looking after Buncrana,
right,
not the executives living in Letterkenny or anywhere else in the county.
Yeah,
this is Buncrana. We'll stand up and we'll look after ourselves.
No one's looking to take it over either. I know where you're coming though, Paul. Thanks very much for that. Paul Brogan, coordinator of Buncrana Businesses Together. You don't want to pull the drawbridge up altogether, Jack. And I don't mean that in any way bad. But the point being is look, there is a process that's going through. It's county-wide. We've heard very clearly from Paul. And I think really then when you have the business community saying, look, if there needs to be increases, there needs to be increases. And councillors seem to be on the same page. So really, it's a process. We don't necessarily need to be afraid of that process. I don't know, Jack. What do you think?
No, look, I think it's healthy. Public consultation will have everyone on board. I would like to get this put to bed once and for all. It's an issue that keeps creeping up. The businesses are very, very clear, very united on this about the half hour. As you can see, Paul would be supportive of an increase. Community organisations will benefit from that increase. We'll use any additional monies to ensure street sweeping the town, ensure the main street's looking its best, to support local businesses, to support festivals like St Patrick's Day, Christmas lights. And I think this is a good example of the business community, community organisations and the councillors being at one for the government.
Okay, I'm going to read this one out because I'll read it when you're off air. It had fit Jack Murray and Finan Bradley better to sort out Westbrook Bridge. It's a nightmare. I was an early hit this morning again. Traffic going in 5 or 6 directions. It's just by the grace of people that you are let out. It's a shambles, easy scene. They don't drive this route. You can see why I wanted to bring this up to your attention whilst you were still on the call.
I agree. The Westbrook Bridge is a bit of a disaster, as is the Mill Bridge. We need estate money from the Department of Transport to carry out the works that are needed. Bitterly disappointed. The Millbridge, which is one of the priorities in Inishowen, got minimal funding, I think something like 10 or 20,000 euro, when we're clearly looking for a footbridge there, which costs significantly more than that. The same for the Westbrook Bridge. Unfortunately, it's not within the gift of the council. We don't have enough money within the council funds to do that. So we need the Department of Transport to stump up, and it's something that I'll continue to raise. And I do drive that road daily. I'm very, very, very aware of it, and it's something I will continue to raise.
I hear you. All right, look after yourself. Thanks very much indeed, Councillor Jack Murray there.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Okay, welcome back to the programme on this Tuesday, the 3rd of March, and we're joined in studio by Garda Grainne from the Letterkenny Garda Station, Garda Grainne Doherty, for Community Garda Information. Grainne, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for calling up.
Thanks for having me.
Right, let's crack on with appeals now, and we'll start with an appeal in relation to the fatal road traffic collision in St Johnston.
Yes, Garda, you're appealing for witnesses following the fatal two-vehicle road traffic collision on the R236 in St Johnston on Tuesday the 24th of February. Garda and emergency services were alerted to the collision involving a lorry and a car. It occurred around 11:15pm. So a male passenger of the car, aged in his late teens, was pronounced deceased at the scene. A second male passenger, also aged in his late teens, was conveyed to Altnagalvin Hospital, where he was later pronounced deceased. The male driver of the car, who was also in his late teens, was conveyed to Altnagalvin Hospital for treatment of serious injuries. He was later transferred to the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast. No other injuries were reported at the time. We're appealing to anybody who might have witnessed this collision to come forward. Road users who might have camera footage, including dash cam, who were travelling in that area between 10:45pm and 11:45pm on Tuesday the 24th of February, they're asked to please make this footage available to investigating Gardaí. Anybody with information are asked to contact Letterkenny Garda Station on 074-9167100, the Garda Confidential line on 1800-666-111, or any Garda station.
Right, so now moving on to an investigation of an assault in Carn Dunna.
Yes, this is a very recent assault. This occurred on the New Road in Carn Dunna on Monday the 2nd of March, so last night, between approximately 10:30pm and 10:50pm. So a man was walking at that location in a car, a grey Lexus, pulled up alongside him. A verbal altercation took place between the man that was out walking and the two males in the car. One of them then got out of the car and proceeded to assault him. The man sustained injuries, none of which are believed to be life-threatening in nature. So we're appealing to motorists who might have travelled in that area with a dash cam between 10:15pm and 11pm last night, Monday the 2nd of March, to please make that footage available to investigating Gardaí. And of course, if anybody witnessed this incident, we're also asking them to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540.
Mm-hmm. Two men in a grey Lexus there, okay. Now, criminal damage being investigated in Glenealy.
Yes, so this incident happened at Monydara, Glenealy, between 11pm and midnight on Saturday the 28th of February. A van had been parked up along the roadside. It was set alight and it was destroyed by the fire. We're appealing to anybody who might have travelled in that area, again with a dash cam, between those times to make that footage available to us. And if anybody can assist this investigation with any type of relevant information, we're asking them to contact Buncrana Gardaí on 932-0540 or the Garda Confidential line on 1800-666-111.
Now, heading south of the gap, a burglary in Donegal Town.
Yes, this burglary happened at a sports club in the area of Lurgan Boy, Donegal Town, between 7:45pm on Monday, the 23rd of February, and 7:30pm on Tuesday, the 24th of February. So the rear window of that property was smashed, entry was gained, and a sum of cash was stolen from within the building. So we're appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity in that area between those dates to please contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530.
And now I always struggle when we cross a month. So that effectively was this day last week and the day before.
Yeah,
so if you saw anything, it's a sports club with hard work going on there. Right, OK. Now, theft incident in Castlefin this time.
Yes, this incident happened on the Ernie Road at Clawfin, Castlefin, so quite near the Claddy Bridge there, in the early hours of Friday, the 27th of February, in and around 1:25 in the morning. A large silver grey van that had a roof rack entered the car park of a business premises in that area, and three black commercial-sized bins and one black domestic bin was stolen from the property. repeating to anybody who might have travelled between the main road, the N15 and Claddy, or between Lifford and Castlefin between midnight and 1 a.m. that morning with a dash cam to make that footage available to us. Any relevant information or details or of sightings off this van in question should be passed on to Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530 or, of course, again, the Garda Confidential line, 1800 666 111.
Now, these are important events that are upcoming, the Check It Fits, because we go to the effort of spending quite a bit on seats for our kids, and we kind of, sometimes a bit of a wing and a prayer that you've got them incorrectly, right? Because there can be straps dangling that you don't necessarily know what they do. Or where you might click things in, etc. But the RSA are on hand to help.
Yes, the RSA have a free Check It Fits service. They're visiting Donegal this week. They're going to be at the following locations between 10 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. each day. So today, March 3rd, they're at Canny and Doherty's Supervalue in Carndonagh. Tomorrow, March 4th, Wednesday, they're at Smith's Toys here in Letterkenny. Thursday, the 5th of March, they're at Letterkenny Shopping Centre. And Friday, the 6th of March, yeah, they're in Supervalue, Donegal.
And don't turn up with your dentures. It's not about that. What are we checking that fits?
So, it's a free service, firstly. You don't need to make an appointment. They'll put your mind at ease. I know, as you said at the start, sometimes these seats, you know, it's a wing and a prayer. You fit them and they're quite complicated at times. And most parents, I would think, are quite unsure. They'd like to think that it's done the correct way, but they're just not 100% sure. If that's you and you're listening today, please do call to any of these. They're free services. They'll put your mind at ease. They'll demonstrate how to fit the restraint correctly, and they'll answer any queries that you might have.
And also, this is not about scaring anyone, but often, you know, they become safe when they're used correctly. And if you just maybe have a belly strap or something, it might not be as effective as it could be. And they know what's what. So that's Supervalue March 3rd in Carndonagh. Smith's Toys in Letterkenny on the 4th. Letterkenny Shopping Centre on the 5th. These are all March dates, of course. And Supervalue Donegal Town on the 6th. The RSA will be on hand to check it fits for you. Right, now, Shachtan na Gaeilge, what's coming up?
Now, to Shachtan na Gaeilge 2026 Bualtailleann, Jacadine and Carula de Martha, Begardi ag Frasler Coffee Loft, Emalia Fay, O Lahar Teresa Jai, Gudji Lahar Teresa Hainjeg or Majin, Matatu Agiri Cora Tarastra, and Be Falcha Riv Gatdana. So on Wednesday, the 4th of March, Gardi will attend at the Coffee Loft in Ballybuffet, just above Alexander's shop there in Ballybuffet, between 10:30 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. So if you want to test your couple of fuckle, please pop in and have a chat. Ask Gaeilge. Everybody is more than welcome. Garda Siobhan Campbell, I believe, will be there. It won't be me with my fluency skills. But
she's doing all right.
Yeah, well, I have a bit of Irish all right, but rusty. Rusty, you get very rusty. You know, if you don't use it, you lose it. You start to forget from school, but it starts to come back to you, you know, when you try and use a few words again. And there's an old Irish, I was actually looking up yesterday, there's an old Irish proverb. And it's as far Gaelic of Rishta na Berla Clishta. And that means broken Irish is better than polished or clever English. And I don't think that's meant in any way to run down the English language, but it's meant just to use what you have, what little Irish words that you have or that you can remember.
I think it's to give people confidence.
It is. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are on, no more than me this morning. I was quite nervous even about reading that bit out because, you know, when you're not using the language, the Irish language regularly, it's a lack of confidence in speaking it. And I think a lot of people are that way.
All right, cool.
So this event is on tomorrow, 4th of March, 10:30 to 11:30 in the Coffee Loft in Ballybuffet. We're encouraging everybody to get involved in our event, of course, but with all of the Shachtan na Gaeilge events, the Donegal County Council actually have a programme of events within Donegal up on their website if anybody wants to check that out. So on Wednesday, look, if you're a fluent Irish speaker, if you haven't spoken Irish like myself since you were at school, if you're starting to learn the Irish language, or if you've never spoken a word of Irish and you haven't a clue, you haven't got one word of Irish and you'd like to pick up a few words of Irish, please do pop in on Wednesday. We're looking forward to seeing everybody there and having a few conversations with the Mass Gaeilge on the day.
Lovely stuff. Garda Grania, thank you very much indeed. That was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 3rd of March 2026. It's back for you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Mike Hearn is our next guest. He's an audiologist at Hidden Hearings Letterkenny Clinic. Thank you so much for joining us, Mike.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
Timely too, because it's World Hearing Day today and Hidden Hearing is shining a light on the powerful connection between healthy hearing and being truly present for the young people in our lives. I've said it before, I don't want to rake over old ground, but it's if your eyes are failing or you're struggling in any way, the first thing you do is go to the optician. People are really good at that. It's across all classes, all backgrounds, or whatever it might be. Hearing is a little thing, and I think fellas, but not exclusively, when it starts to go a little bit, can be reluctant to go and get it looked at, yet they've had glasses on their face for 30 years.
You'll certainly come across that, but I'm glad to say it's kind of changing.
We're
a
getting
wee bit
better
now.
Yeah. All right, so what message do you want to get across today? I think it's important, isn't it, that people live their best lives?
Oh, very much so. I mean, for people with a hearing loss that they don't do something about it, like it leads to like an awful lot of problems, you know. It can actually be quite tiring, you know, if you're missing bits of the conversation, you're struggling to hear, you're really having to put a lot more effort into just hearing what people are saying to you, and that's quite tiring.
Mm.
You can find it kind of isolating. You might tend to start avoiding, you know, people so phone up and say, oh, we're going for dinner, do you want to come with us? And you think, oh, shit, last time I was there, I heard nothing. There's no point, you know, mm-hmm. And you tend to isolate yourself a wee bit.
And you might
not
be fully aware that you're actually doing that. You might think you're making a choice or whatever, but...
It's very, very gradual. For most people, when they lose their hearing, it really does tend to kind of creep up on you gradually, you know. And you'd be amazed. I've had people in with me and you know straight away that they obviously have... desperate bother with the hearing, and they turn to you and say, but I'm grand, you know, but it's you have to remember that this is going on for maybe 10-15 years, and it's just another small wee bit each year,
and maybe other senses are helping out a little bit, and they've kind of learned to cope and they're ticking along,
yeah.
But not to their full potential.
Oh no, like they'll develop coping mechanisms, you know, and then become very adept at like lip reading and other things like that, you know. But obviously, it's no substitution for actually hearing well, you know?
Yeah, if you have any questions, by the way, whilst we have Mike with us, 086 60 25,000. When is the right time to sort of begin getting regular hearing tests? Because a lot of the conversation could be framed that, you know, you do something when you notice something has changed, but there's things happening that you can pick up that we might not necessarily be fully aware of.
So probably from the age of about 50 plus, Greg, we kind of recommend, you know, just as part of your overall healthcare that you would come in and have a hearing test with us. If somebody comes in a few years later, then they say, you know, I think my hearing is down. We say, well, we have something to look back at. We can look back at the 2026 test or whatever. If you haven't been in previously, we don't know where you were previously, you know?
Yeah, and you've got a baseline, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing too is just in the house, it's communicating with those that you might live with. It's the volume of the radio. It's the volume of the TV. It's the quality of the sound of the music.
Well, I suppose those are kind of some of the things to look out for. You know, if the family are complaining that the TV is up too high, if you're asking people to repeat, if you're having bother in noisy environments, you know, in the car, or if you're out for lunch and you're having bother what people are saying to you. If you're missing phone calls, you know, if you don't hear the phone ring or the doorbell ring. But generally speaking, it'll probably be your own family members will mention it to you, you know, and say, that's not what I said at all.
And I think sometimes as hearing loss is like turning the TV down. But it's more complex than that. It's the parts of sound potentially that you could hear. So, you know, you might not be able to hear the high end as well as you did, or music might sound like you need to adjust the EQ more. Is that fair to say that it's not all about volume?
It's about what
you're hearing.
Yeah, it's deaf for most of the people that come in. If it's like presbycusis, which is age-related hearing loss, or if it's noise-induced hearing loss, people tend to lose the high frequencies and not the low frequencies. Now, the low frequencies would be kind of where you get your volume, and the high frequencies would be where you get your clarity of speech. Mm.
So increasing the volume of your TV will also increase the volume of the bass. So that's not necessarily improving your listening experience, for example.
And most of the people that are in with you, if you actually question them and you chat to them and you say, well, when you turn the TV up high, do you hear it any better? They kind of stop and they think and they go, actually, no, I don't. Mm. It just makes it louder. It doesn't really make it any clearer.
Which is interesting. And that also talks to those noisy environments where there's a lot of hum. And someone's voice pitch might be higher than that, and you can hear and things feel loud, but you just can't make out quite what they're saying.
Well, that's kind of the most common thing people would say to you. They'd sort of, especially if there's a wee bit of denial, they'll sort of say, I can hear him okay, I just don't know what he's saying to me.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Cost, right. So there's so much available now. I mean, there's hearing aids now that employ AI to help you hear better. But what is the entry, right? So what is the entry in reality? Because I actually think a lot of this isn't down necessarily to a want. It's a financial situation, because there is a perception that hearing aids are expensive.
Well, I mean, what's the entry point? The entry point is actually completely free if you have PRSI stamps on, you know. So that's your starting point. It would literally cost you nothing if you had enough PRSI stamps on, you know. And then you can go up. Like, in Hidden Hearing, we provide a full range. Like, we literally have everything from, if you want to call it a Ford Fiesta, to a Rolls Royce.
But if you're going in at the Ford Fiesta, which I presume is the free one, are you talking bulky? Are you talking the battery doesn't last as long? Are you,
no,
you know?
They generally, nowadays, I nearly have to pick up, when someone comes in, they need to pick up the hearing aid and look at the label on the back of it to see which one is which. It's nothing to do with size. It's to do with the processor in the hearing aid. So it's the computer chip. And essentially, the faster the computer in the hearing aid, the more calculations it can make per second, the better it is at filtering out the things you don't want to hear and emphasising the things you do want to hear.
Your brain has to get used to hearing aids, though, doesn't it? I know of people who don't wear their hearing aid and then pop them in if they're heading somewhere, and everything sounds wrong to them. It's too loud, or it doesn't feel balanced, or sometimes they might, in the past, just put one in, right, because that gets them by. That's not the way to use a hearing aid. You do have to commit to it, do you?
Very much so. I suppose in the old days, like when I started 15 years ago, we weren't as understanding. And you would literally, what we were trained to do is you'd put the hearing aids on someone the first day and you say, now that's going to be uncomfortable for the first few days, but you need to go away and get used to it. Thank God that it's completely gone away from that now. So we would intentionally actually put the person way too soft, maybe about 60% of the volume that the computer would recommend, and bring the person gradually up over maybe a month or so, just to make it as easy as possible.
Well, this caller says, my husband has a hearing aid, but he's very reluctant to go out as he says the noise in a crowded room kills him. What's he doing wrong?
Probably needs to go back and see his audiologist and have a wee chat. You can adjust the settings in the hearing aid.
It's too loud. That's what's wrong. But I wonder, is he popping it in to go out?
Again, you know, you're not going to get the best results just by popping it in.
Let us know, by the way, listener, if you don't mind. Like, does your husband wear the hearing aid all of the time? And does it sound particularly loud in a crowded room? I'll try and get a more specific answer for you. Can I ask, is there any alternative to normal hearing aids? My mum is allergic to the metal in a hearing aid. Have you come across that before?
You get people asking about nickel allergies and things like that. There is a new hearing aid that's just been launched called the Oticon Zeal. Now, if the person has very specific allergies, what they would need to do is contact us with the list of their allergies and we would get onto the manufacturer and just double check for them.
A caller says, what's your opinion on using candles to remove wax? Now, my hearing or my eyes, I ain't going to start messing around with candles around my eyes or anything. And there seems to be this attitude towards ears that they're less significant or less important. I don't know if you've got something to say on that, but I would be inclined to get a professional to do it.
Personally, if I was worried about wax in my ear, I would go see a wax removal expert. We have a lovely lady, Orla, comes to us every Monday at our branch in Letterkenny, or I would go and see the nurse in your practice.
Can I get a hearing aid on my medical card? You mentioned earlier on about stamps. I think it was stamps.
So that was PRSI stamps.
Sorry, yeah.
So on your medical card, yes. And what you would do there is you need to get onto your GP and your GP would refer you to the HSE.
So there has to be a medical need for it then at that point, doesn't it? Yeah, so that's, in other words, they have to screen this one way or other that it requires a GP referral.
It requires a GP referral, yeah.
Are earphones bad for your hearing? Should I stop wearing them?
Nah.
This is about volume.
Yeah,
here.
It basically. So if the ear is exposed to a very loud sound for a period of time, you're going to damage the ear. So the advice we would give is kind of the 60-60 rule, which is about 60% of the maximum volume for about 60 minutes and then take a break for a while.
Do you have an opinion on in-ear versus over-ear?
Personally, I would prefer over-ear. But I mean, I don't. It really is about the volume.
Yeah. How do I convince my mum that a hearing aid will be so beneficial to her? I just can't get her to get a test. And people are, again, I've experienced this in the past. They might have a notion that I'm not old I don't need one, that people might judge me. If I go to the hairdresser, they might see it. There's a lots of different ways that, again, and I'll make the, we compliment people on their glasses, right, to help that sense. And yet some people have this notion of hearing aids, which I really believe they shouldn't.
If this lady could convince her mother at all to come in and actually have a test, it's a very comprehensive test now. Everything is laid out very, very clearly. And there'll always be a demo where you would actually get hearing aids, program them to the loss, put them on the person. You can try chatting them from a distance. But my favourite part is we do what we call speech and noise. So there's a wee clip on YouTube I use where they went into a busy bar or restaurant and I play that through some speakers, and it's exactly the same as if we're out in a busy restaurant or bar and you have a conversation with the person. You take the hearing aids on and off. They can see the they can hear the difference for themselves, you know?
A couple of questions about hearing aids in gatherings in big areas. People sort of saying everything's increased, right? So whilst you might want to have a conversation, me and you, absolutely everything is elevated. And that's 2 or 3 people have texted in with the same issue. Is that about the brain getting used to it, or is it they're set wrong or what?
A little bit of both. So a lot of the modern hearing aids now will have different programs on them. So you'll have like comfort programs for background noise, where it's going to lower the background noise. You can have a speech and noise program where it'll actually try and make, if you're just talking one-on-one to someone in a very noisy environment, this is good because it tries to make the person's voice louder than the background noise, you know? So with the modern hearing aids, there's quite a few settings like that. Speech and background noise is the thing that people complain about the most, and that's what all the hearing aid manufacturers are striving to correct.
If you damage or lose one of your hearing aids, can you get one replaced?
Yeah, absolutely. With ourselves anyway. No, I can't speak for other companies, but if somebody came into us and they had lost one of their hearing aids, we can replace just one.
There's a couple of questions here. How can I tell if I'm starting to lose my hearing? And another one was asking about a child. How do I know if my child might have a hearing problem? They tell me they can't hear, but I think it might be selective hearing. There's only one real way to check, isn't it?
Yeah, into the doctor. If it's a child, you need to, your first protocol is your GP.
Because dependent on their age, that can, although there's different views on it, it can have an impact on speech development as well, for an example. Or school, where, you know. Do I really need hearing aids or can I manage without them? Well, I mean, that's ultimately... But why would you live your life anyway less than it needs to be? Can an audiologist do anything about, and you know what I'm going to say now, tinnitus? It comes up every single time,
and so many people endure it.
It's tough.
Unfortunately not, no. The real advice is coping mechanisms. It's not like quiet is no longer your friend. If you have tinnitus, you do not want to be in the quiet. You want to put on the radio, put on the TV, something like that. Not even that you're listening to it. You're just trying to confuse the brain and give the brain something else to concentrate on. There's wonderful apps available, but it's so different from person to person. Like the apps will normally be the sound of rainfall or a rainforest or ocean waves, something like that. And one person will come in to you and say, oh, that was absolutely terrific. God, I drifted off to sleep so quickly last night. And the next person will come in and say, that was worse than the tinnitus. That kept me awake. So it just differs so much from person to person.
Is it?
Right.
So again, maybe we're getting better at it. But after a certain age, maybe over 50, get your annual hearing tests. Or every other year, if that's the way, because it gives you a level, right, that you know if you're matching or what have you. And also to go in and have a consultation or a chat, or bring someone with you, because the anticipation of something is often and invariably worse than the situation itself. So I don't know why someone might be reluctant to do so. Right, okay. What was I going to say? Sorry, someone messaged in here. It's not a question, such as a comment. That's it. Anything else that you want to add, Mike?
No, well, just thanks for having me today, Greg. And I would reach out to everybody listening. And if you do notice any of the signs or anything that we said sounded kind of familiar to you, please do get in touch via www.hiddenhearing.ie or phone our local branch on 074-911-3515.
Yep, and two things can happen. A, you might need your ear shringed, you know, right? That could be it.
Yeah.
Or B, you could If you ever see those videos, they're amazing videos of when a person hears or sees for the first time.
Yes,
and you know, I've no doubt that people who've been reluctant to get glasses, for an example, or who've been resisting getting hearing aids, that there is that almost eureka moment as well. I'm sure you see that on a daily basis where all of a sudden things make a great strive. In terms of improvement. Mike Hearn, audiologist at Hidden Hearings, Letterkenny Clinic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Greg.
Right. Now, thank you so much for all of your texts coming in this morning. Let's go to Boncrana. Oh, sorry. I dropped a comment, I should say. About parking, don't forget, no matter where you park, legally, you get the first 10 minutes free, but 10 minutes goes in very fast. I'm not really quite sure about this 10 minutes grace, because... You would have to be scanned by the parking warden, and then scanned to have been there. This 10 minutes, I'm not sure about it. I don't want to say that as if it's a fact, but maybe more of you in a hive mind kind of way can. Hello, why is parking in Ballybuffet 50 cents an hour and Letterkenny free for the first 30 minutes? Should Ballybuffet not be the same? There seems to be less interest in Ballybuffet about a period of grace for parking. That's been my read of the situation. Ballybuffet has no free parking at all. There's supposed to be a 10-minute grace, but that really depends on the traffic wardens. The street is clogged on a regular basis. Letterkenny has constant free parking spaces because people pull in and pull out. Ballybuffet needs this as well. On oil costs, I ordered oil yesterday. I got 365 litres for €399. Today, you'd get 302 litres from the same supplier. That's mad, almost 30 cent a litre more. Good morning, Greg. The way things is rising, our government needs to step up and provide support instead of sending money to other countries. I work full time, pay my mortgage. I'm on my own. The bills such as diesel, home heating oil and electric not included. Food costs, I find it so hard at the minute. I'm so annoyed that the working people are suffering. We will make decisions to give up our jobs if the crisis carries on. Thank you. So that's someone effectively wondering, would they be better off not working? And last one on oil for now. The greed of the oil companies here is unbelievable. Selling oil now that they bought at a lower price, making a fortune on the backs of people who are already finding it hard to make ends meet. I think the way prices have gone up on current stocks and supplies is something we need to investigate further. But that must wait for another day. That's where we leave it on the programme today. Thank you very much for listening, watching, texting. It's all very much appreciated, and we'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.